You're listening to Decoding the Gurus from July 09, 2026, Supplementary Material 52, Under-Optimized Academics, Tired Economists, and Bailiwick Clarifications. This episode includes a humorous critique of extreme wellness and optimization routines, questioning the practical value of some popular lifestyle hacks. It also delves into a prominent intellectual's controversial proposal for billionaires to fund anti-woke academic chairs at top universities, and briefly touches on an economist's new documentary advocating for a wealth tax.
Hello and welcome to Decoding the Gurus supplementary material with the devilishly handsome professor from down under, the silver fox of the podcast, Matthew Bryan, and his co-host, partner in crime, me, Chris Kavanagh, Northern Irish in Japan. That's what I am. So there you go. Hello, Matt. Good day.
Good day. Good day. Good week. Happy Monday to you, sir. How was your week last week? I didn't see you. I was off down in beautiful Noosa, just hanging
out. That's right. Having a holiday, and you're going to recover from your holiday by taking another holiday this week, right? The last holiday took it out of you, so you need to take another. The life of academics, people say, we live in ivory towers, but it's not all fun and games. Sometimes there's like days of work in between the holiday.
Yeah, like today, I know, frantically dealing with all my students who have missed me and will miss me in the coming week, where I'm going to be off on Fraser Island doing some walks in the forest.
Is Fraser Island a good thing? Is it a nice place?
It's a nice place. Yeah, it's a nice place. Yeah. But I'm just tired, Chris. Just so weary. Sleepy all the time. I think I'm either low iron or low T or both. I'm not sure what it is.
Low iron? Jesus, you need to, you're going to have to get on top of that. The optimizers, Matt, they've got things that they could recommend.
That's right. That's what it is. I'm insufficiently optimized. I think they take it too far. I think they're overly optimized. I, however, could be under-optimized. That's the issue.
I've came across, there's a fantastic article I'm going to recommend for people called, it's by someone, I don't know them, so I cannot... I'm not endorsing their broader outfit. Okay, that's always a good disclaimer to put in. But on Substack, there's somebody called Elliot Paisley, and they wrote a review of Chris Williamson's live tour. And it's called Chris Williamson is a Slave, Anatomy of Routine. And it's quite acerbic. So let me give you a taste of it. So... they're talking about coffee, and he says, no coffee for the first 90 minutes. What? Why not? Your adenosine system, the caffeine acts on it, isn't active for the first 90 minutes a day. So having a morning coffee is literally pointless. And this is the guy's response. Literally pointless, you say. Here's just one point, Christopher Williamson. It's nice. It's nice to have a coffee in the morning. I like disobeying my adenosine system and going downstairs and making a coffee and drinking it without once looking at my stopwatch. My adenosine system is not the boss of me. The adenosine system is my employee. He does not decide when I have a coffee. If he doesn't like it, he can quit. Lamentably, his pal doesn't agree with me, .. And it destroys you in the afternoon. Correct. Oh, is that it? Is that correct? I was wondering why every day after lunch I developed the symptoms of leprosy, why I suddenly come down with a bad case of bone failure and my brain fills with malignant tumors that all play the kazoo and none of them very well. Sorry, Mr. AS, won't happen again. Also, who says correct as an answer in real life to an actual human being? So it goes on. It goes on, right? But the part that follows, it says, Chris, he's detailing his morning routine. And he says, I then have salt and water. And the guy wrote, he's a mollusk. We're listening to your barn. I'm drinking electric pipes from a whelk. it's pretty good. And to Chris Williamson's credit, in the comment after that, it's quite a long piece, you know, kind of brutally mocking him. He wrote, always nice to meet a fan at the bottom. So that's a good response.
That's fine. But Chris is, he's symptomatic though, isn't he, of this broader trend where people, I stereotype Californians, not all Californians, but in my mind, this all comes from California. It's like Isengard, from which the stuff spreads throughout Mirkwood or whatever.
It's a pure form, Plato's pure forms, right? That's the pure form of wellness is California.
yeah, that's right. And like routines and an incredible number of supplements and just little rituals and little things you must do or can't do. And in their defense, like there was like, my entire adult life, there has been this whole phenomena of, I guess, lazy lifestyle articles, which is, you know, science has found, you know, remember, you know, you had to drink a glass of red wine, then you can't drink a glass of wine, it'll kill you. Then you should eat chocolate, then you shouldn't eat chocolate. You know what I mean? There's a whole category of lazy lifestyle articles. And I think that has metamorphized into an entire prescription for life based on whatever random thing people have read somewhere in the academic literature. And actually, this goes towards another unpopular opinion I've got, Chris. I think they should have never allowed anyone without a PhD to read any of the peer-reviewed research. They should have
not endorsed by the co-host.
Kept it under lock and key. It's done more harm than good.
No.
They shouldn't be reading any of that stuff.
Whenever you get your pitchforks out to come for out of touch elites, remember it's Matt that is giving this deadline. I just want to signpost this for the critics who inevitably bring it up in the future. Matt said that, okay? And I said, no, Matt, I disagree. So when you're attributing that to someone on this podcast, that was Matt, okay?
All right. It just has done some harm, though, the popular consciousness. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Well, transparency, Matt, it's done more good than harm. That's the way I put it.
I don't think you have to necessarily have a PhD. I just think you have to, there should be some board, an international board, where you have to be able to do one decent literature review to show that you can critically evaluate the literature.
And then you get access to it.
And then you get access to have a connection. I realize there's a catch-22 with my plan, because you need access to the literature in order to do the literature review. So it's complicated. I haven't figured it all out yet.
You haven't got all the details yet. But it's a working project. I get that. I just saw out of the corner of my eye another line from this piece that I'm going to have to read you. I know people reading stuff of an article is not that pleasant, but you've got to appreciate this. So he's got the quote from Chris Williamson. As soon as I'm up, I'm making a beeline for daylight. And the writer says, what an abyss of a line. What a profoundly unromantic view of life. He doesn't amble out into the sunshine. He makes a beeline for daylight. Not when he's ready, but the second he's up. The same moment his eyes bolt open, Chris Williamson navigates the most direct and energy efficient route to diffuse sky radiation. To him, it's not the nourishing glow of a maternal star, something our ancestors danced and feasted in celebration of. Daylight's just a source of vitamin D, something that turns the ignition in his metabolic system. It doesn't even exist until it makes contact with his boring face.
It is a bit harsh. It's a bit harsh,
but you know, it's got a nice couple of lines in it. So I recommend people take a look at that. Apparently, he's also covered Stephen Bartlett in an article the previous week. So
Good. There you go. Good. Well, Stephen Bartlett deserves to be covered by an acerbic, vinegary article like that.
Yeah, that's you know, speaks to my soul. And on that subject, Matt, you know, I thought when we covered Eric Weinstein trying to convince people that he's more connected to Jeffrey Epstein than they could possibly imagine, that we'd hit peak Eric. Like, that's just an encapsulation of how much he needs attention, that he's willing to demand the people, even inventing, you know, ludicrous claims that Epstein wanted him to be his number two and all this kind of thing. Like, I thought that was peak Eric. And then I saw a post that he made on Twitter. I think you've seen this too, but I'm going to remind you of it.
Yes. Yeah. You have to read it out for everybody.
Yeah. I'm not going to read the entire thing because it's long, right? But as with everything Eric produces. But here we go. The talk was about a mystery. It costs $5 to $15 million to endow a chaired professorship, say in demography, immigration, virology, virus origins, public health, vaccine safety, nudge, noble lies, evolutionary theory, brackets gender, political science, brackets color revolution technology, Near Eastern studies, brackets Islam as colonial empire, economics, bracket asset taxes, etc. Yet our anti-woke billionaires have not figured out that they alone can reward the academics like Martin Kulldorff or Jordan B. Peterson, Brett Weinstein, Heller Hain, Peter Boghossian, James Lindsay, by reinserting them with no teaching duties and gorgeous housing / vacation homes and discretionary funds. Imagine 25 academics with giant huevos reinserted back into Oxford, Harvard, Cambridge, Princeton, present in every faculty meeting, empowered to blow up the woke mind virus where it breeds. Imagine if every university learned the lesson that heroic behavior was actually admirable and rewarded. Duh. God, this is so dumb. Similar for journalists and editors at newspapers. Yet, something is wildly wrong with our billionaire / trillionaire class. This is one of the most effective ways to destroy the revolutionary mental illness by rewarding the academics who, along with their families, paid with livelihoods, pensions, their names, academic access. So to translate that, Matt, he is basically saying that all the rich people, people like, say, Peter Thiel or Elon Musk and so on, like, they're always going on about all these things we need to do to reform academia, to, you know, solve the meaning crisis, whatever the case might be. But the answer is staring them in the face. And it's if they just established endowed chairs in universities and give the academics that they handpicked to occupy those chairs massive endowments, big houses, unlimited funds, just say 15 to 25. You could blow up the whole academic system with revolutionary thinkers, Peter Boghossian and James Lindsay and stuff, install them, Matt, and just imagine what is going to happen if you have those guys in the department meetings at Harvard. What wonders?
It's quite a list of revolutionary thinkers he's got there. He doesn't put his own name in there, I thought, which is admirable self-respect.
Yeah, very reserved, yes.
Very Eric. He will often make these kinds of statements and name everyone when he's clearly talking about himself, but he's naming his brother, his sister-in-law.
His wife.
You know, the small circle of people who are incredibly Eric adjacent. So the implication is clear, but the mind boggles, Chris. What would happen if we gave James Lindsay a massive fucking house? What a world we could be living in.
I know.
In. Utopia today.
Imagine James Lindsay bloviating at some departmental meeting in Harvard. What world-altering outcomes would come from that if James could go on about critical theory at a department meeting? I mean, it's hard to fathom, Matt. What kind of changes could come from that? I can't even imagine.
I'm imagining some sort of post-scarcity utopia. That's yeah. What we'd have.
Yeah. It's certainly not gay space communism or whatever, because he's not a big fan of communism.
No, but, you know, against those things. Yeah, something.
But it speaks to this very childish perspective that Eric and his friends have, that academia is not a massive worldwide network of hundreds of thousands of people working in disparate disciplines, and largely the majority of work going undiscussed in tabloid newspapers or by Elon Musk. No, they think it's like 20 people and all they need to do is have the kind of right outlook and you'll get like warp technology and like
it doesn't matter that they have
or whatever.
It doesn't matter that they have no research track record. That's irrelevant. Just they just still deserve the professorial endowment. Absolutely. Like it doesn't matter that their main job is just tweeting or going on podcasts. That doesn't matter. That's who we need. That's who we need to at the very tippy top. $15 million endowments, no teaching, big houses, just clean slate, totally free. I mean, I don't think they'd do anything as...
Even if they had that, I don't think they'd...
Oh, they wouldn't do anything so mundane as research. Well, first of all, they don't know how. That's a problem. First of all, they haven't done it. You know, they haven't done it for their
entire career. There's a couple of anti-vax people. Peter. Well, he mentioned Martin Kulldorff, who I believe is at least a medic.
Okay. Is he an anti-vax type person?
He's a COVID dissident, shall we say, Matt? What do you call that guy that fell out of favor that had a position?
Not Pierre Corey.
Pierre Corey, not Peter McCulloch, the other hanger rod guy. What was his name? Barry Weiss. Loved him. Vinay Prasad.
Anyway, you get the idea, but that's the interesting thing too. And it mirrors Jordan Peterson's thing, which is what we need is more incredibly politically motivated partisan people doing, not research, because I don't think they're imagining they're going to do research. They're just going to, give their opinions about things, bloviate. That's what we need. Woke is bad because it's got too much of a political agenda. What we need to do is inject in our anti-work agenda and do the same thing.
Well, I'm just realizing, though, haven't they already done this? Didn't they set up a bunch of anti-woke quasi-universities and Peterson Academy and stuff? So they literally have what they want, which is these people giving, the types of courses, which by and large are not research-based courses at all. They're not empirical courses. They're just, extended YouTube channels, basically. And they have students taking them and it doesn't seem to be doing anything except generating, another income stream for the relevant persona. So when you look at the anti-woke universities and how thin their representation of science or engineering or law or any of the, the disciplines which they hold up as the desirable, better way that everybody should be focusing on, but not at their universities.
No.
They've got arts and humanities out the wazoo.
That's right. Like the so-called uncontaminated disciplines. I suppose in their mind, all the disciplines are contaminated. Like in astronomy, because some astronomer somewhere has written some sort of maybe woke opinion piece. That's it. Astronomy has fallen. They probably feel the same way about mathematics. Well, we know what Eric thinks about physics. So it's all corrupted, isn't it? But it's very true you say. I don't think Jordan Peterson's university or any of those anti-woke things. Do they have a proper mathematics department, for instance? Would they have such a thing? I highly doubt it.
Best, they have a course on maths, and it's not the kind of course where you're actually expected to do mathematics. It's just talk about maths or this kind of thing. But and also, Matt, this tweet from Eric was in relation to somebody asking if his speech at ARC, the kind of Jordan Peterson-esque conference that they set up for right-wing populists that they now do, I think, annually. And I think it's the Association for Responsible Citizenship or something like that, right? Anyway, he gave a lecture there, the usual kind of stuff. And somebody was saying, is it going to be released publicly? And that's when Eric went off on this, tirade. And at the end of it, he CCs in Mark Andreessen, Elon Musk, and Bill Ackman. So he's just I think he's a bit salty that Peter Thiel stopped providing him with a stipend.
yeah, that's right. How come? Yeah, I guess from his point of view, he's obviously noticed that the Silicon Valley moguls are all very weird and more than anti-woke. They're some sort of paleocon weirdos. So why aren't they giving mouthpieces like him more money? It makes sense. I understand why he's salty.
They give him it for a decade, at least Peter Thiel did. So you know, like what happened? Well, that's Eric. He's gonna Eric. You'll never stop him Ericing. another similar figure that we've covered and is having a little moment in the sun is old Gary Stevenson. You know Gary?
I know Gary.
I think one area in which you and Gary are similar is that you're both very tired.
Yes. We just need long holidays. I sympathize with Gary about that.
Yeah. Well, so Gary had a documentary come out on Channel 4. I have not watched it yet, but it's around 90 minutes long, and it's about, you know, his kind of campaign to get a wealth tax introduced. And also, it does include voices from critics in it. Apparently, it's Louis Theroux's production company that were involved with it. But there's a new round of media coverage of Gary coming in on the back of that. And also, Gary has put out a little video encouraging people to watch the documentary, which I have a couple of clips of. But I did read the Times article where they interviewed him, and it was called "Gary Stevenson, I Want a Wealth Tax on the Super Rich Like Me." And this article, Matt, it's quite something. There's a number of lines in it that, you know, just struck me. The headline one that was getting repeated around was, this is a quote from Gary: "I'll be totally honest with you. I think I'm one of the best, if not the best, inequality economists in the world." So, you know, there's been questions if Gary is an economist, but apparently he's not just an economist. Much like with trading, he's possibly the best economist in the world.
Is there anything that Gary's done that he's not the best at? That's the question. I don't think so.
It's funny you mentioned that, because we often mention that when Gary's interviewed, there's a couple of topics that are reliably going to come up. Elite university.
At elite university. Yes.
Yeah, elite university. And often, surprisingly, his performance in